You can't turn a page or click a link to a news site lately without seeing some mention of vaccines. The resurgence of measles, which was supposed to be a dead disease in the United States, fired up the vaccine debate anew. Now, Oregon has a deadline approaching, school exclusion day. Students who are not up to date with their required immunizations or exemptions for them are excluded from school on February 18th. Let's get into the details. We have two guests with us in the Oregon Immunization Program. Dr. Paul Cieslak is the medical director. Dr. Paul, welcome back.
Well, thank you very much.
It's good to have you here. And we also have with us Stacy Diasis Matthews, who is the school law coordinator for the Oregon Immunization Program. Stacy, welcome to you.
Thank you for having me today.
All right. To be clear, Stacy, this day does come every year. It's not something new, right?
That's true. So the goal of Oregon's immunization law is to make sure kids can go to school in a safe and healthy environment that's free of vaccine preventable diseases. So once a year, we have Exclusion Day, which is Wednesday, February 18th this year. Kids need to make sure that their records are updated with either the immunization dates or the exemption documentation by that day, or they will not be able to come to school or childcare until that documentation is on file.
And is it about the same date every year?
It is always the third Wednesday in February.
Third Wednesday. And why then? Why not say sooner, like, you know, the end of October or something, sooner in the school year?
Well, most schools and child cares use the fall to notify parents of immunizations they are missing and give parents an opportunity to make an appointment with their doctor, go get those shots, and get the records on file.
Is there usually a flurry of activity around the time of Exclusion Day?
Yes, certainly. Clinics and doctor's offices are very busy during this time trying to get those last-minute immunizations into children before the February 18th deadline.
Dr. Paul Cieslak, so much is being said about vaccines right now. You know, as we referenced at the top, you really can't turn anywhere without hearing about something in the vaccine debate. Is this all from the measles situation, from your perception?
I think right now it is. You know, we've had persistent problems with pertussis, also known as whooping cough, and periodic outbreaks from pertussis. California had a really big one in 2010, and they're seeing a lot of it this year. Oregon had a big year in 2012. So pertussis and measles, I would suggest, are probably the two biggest. But you know, there's chickenpox out there as well. We've got clusters of chickenpox cases. So plenty of disease left to be prevented.
And what's the current situation, particularly with measles in Oregon?
Well, so far this year, we have only one case related to the Southern California situation. A couple of incubation periods have gone by since that case in early January, so we're pretty comfortable that there was no spread from that one case that came in Oregon. Last couple of years, though, seem a bit higher. We had six cases in 2013 and five in 2014, and that's after a string of, you know, very, very low years. We were averaging about one case a year before that for about a decade, and then to see six cases and five cases is, I think, kind of a warning shot across the bow.
So I know you hear occasionally from people, well, measles doesn't sound that bad. It's just some bumps and a rash, that sort of thing. But what are the complications that measles can lead to?
Well, first of all, it's usually more than bumps and a rash. I mean, kids have fever and they're coughing, and they usually look pretty sick. I mean, they don't want to get out of bed. They're pretty they look pretty ill for a period of 1 to 2 weeks. So it's a little more serious than that, you know, at best. About 5% of people will get pneumonia from it, and that's probably the most common complication. Occasionally you can get encephalitis, which is brain inflammation.
Are there particular infections that work with measles to make that happen?
No, the measles virus itself can give you a brain inflammation and, you know, can put you under for quite some time. You know, most people do recover from it. That's true. But as I say, 5 or 6% of people get pneumonia, wind up in the hospital with it. And in developed countries nowadays, the death rate is overall somewhere between 1 in 1,000 and 1 in 2,000. But remember, once upon a time, everybody got measles. So to see, you know, 1 in every 1,000 kids dying of measles would be quite striking were we to see it nowadays.
So I'm not sure which of you is better in a position to answer the question about whether it is true that Oregon leads the country in unvaccinated children.
So it is true that Oregon does have the highest rate of exemption for kindergartners. That actually doesn't mean that we have the highest rate of unvaccinated kids in kindergarten. over 90% of kids have the immunizations for each of the school-required vaccines.
Okay. Help me understand that one again.
While Oregon does have the highest rate of kids who have an exemption to vaccines, because of the exclusion day and the schools checking the documentation of everybody, they make sure that all the other kids have all of the documentation of their immunizations on file, which means that 90% of kids are documented to have the immunizations for all the school-required vaccines, which is pretty high.
All right. So, is it spread pretty well across the state, though? I mean, the places where there are exemptions, does it run a little higher? I mean, we hear a lot about Jackson County and Ashland in particular running much higher than the rest of the state.
There are certainly some communities in Oregon that do have higher exemption rates than others and lower immunization rates.
We're talking about School Exclusion Day coming up on February 18th because it is the third Wednesday in February with two folks from the Oregon Immunization Program. Stacy Diasis-Matthews is the school law coordinator at the Immunization Program. Dr. Paul Cieslak is the medical director, and you can join us with your questions and comments at 800-838-3760. Anywhere you can hear us, 800-838-3760, or send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. Let's see. So how long has the trend been going on in the seeking of exemptions? And, for example, compared with, say, 15 years ago, are there very many more exemptions than there were?
We have seen the exemption rate increase steadily for about the past 10 or 15 years. We've seen a slight increase every year.
Yeah, since the year 2000, really, it was around 1%, and pretty steady. But then after the year 2000, things really started to take off, and it basically increased every year until the most recent year showed 7% exemptions.
Was that because the year 2000 would put it about 2 years after that British study, later debunked, and in fact the doctor has now been barred from practicing medicine in England? That sounds like that was about the same period in time, the study that linked autism and shots that was, again, debunked.
Right. I think there was actually a concatenation of factors that together conspired to get people to start questioning immunizations. But there were those, as you say, now discredited information out there suggesting problems with some of the vaccines. I think more and more people started to try to make their own medical decisions, going on the Internet, seeing what they can learn. There's a lot of information on the Internet, and some of it is accurate, and a lot of it isn't. And I think the degree to which, people are, kind of going over the heads of their doctors and going for stuff that, making choices that aren't recommended by their doctors has led to more vaccine immunization exemptions. And people tend to, talk to each other. So, information suggesting that vaccines don't work or that they're harmful can be spread among little social circles, and you get little pockets of people all agreeing with each other that they shouldn't be vaccinated. So I think several things kind of happening at once conspire to raise the exemption rate. But remember, still more than 90% of parents are saying, yes, we think that the vaccinations are the right things to do for our kids, and that's been able to keep the disease rates down so far.
Let's take a call. We have Mike in Eureka, California, on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking immunizations with Dr. Paul Cieslak and Stacy Diasis-Matthews.
Hi. I had a question that was prompted by the comment that 90% of the kids being vaccinated was pretty good, and that kind of made me wonder, because I've heard that unless we have, I can't remember the number, but it seems like it was 92 or 93%, then there's no what they call herd protection, which is what, all the 93% surrounding the ones that are not vaccinated help protect them. And when that is below that, that it kind of goes away. I don't know to what degree. I don't know if it just goes pop like a balloon or if it's just like a sieve with more holes and more pathways for the virus to get to even people that have the vaccination, which does not, from my understanding, does not preclude that the person will not get it if they're exposed to it. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's accurate. Your information is good. Basically, we think that if measles is put into a completely susceptible population, a given case of measles will produce, on average, about 15 additional cases. So to make the disease go away, you need to get that number down to less than one, so that each case produces less than one additional case, and then the epidemic will peter out. That means you got to prevent at least 14 out of those 15, and that's about 93%. I've been using the number 94%, but we're in the same ballparks, 92, 95%. That's for measles. That's for a highly contagious disease. The number is probably lower for some other diseases. Now, remember, the exemption rate of 7% in kindergarten doesn't mean that that's the susceptibility within the entire population, because remember, a lot of those kids came to school many years ago when the exemption rate was lower, and they're more highly vaccinated, and many adults are more highly vaccinated, and of course some adults have had the disease already. So I think we are on the cusp of hitting that number where we're going to lose our herd immunity to measles. And the fact that I'm not so much bothered by the notion that a couple of people got measles while in Disneyland. There's people arriving from overseas all the time, and measles is regularly being reintroduced. What bothers me more is that it seems like there's been a lot of transmission from those initial cases that happened in the latter part of 2014, so that there's chains of transmission that don't seem to be ending yet. And that bothers me more. That makes me worried that, maybe we are on the cusp of losing that so-called herd immunity.
It sounds like we're sort of riding a line here and about to drop below it to a point where the growth would be a little more geometric or exponential or something.
That's what I'm afraid of, right? We're going to get to a point where if the rate of exemptions is high enough, we're going to see sustained transmission. Measles won't be one or two cases a year. It'll be just a constant thing that we're battling.
Well, Dr. Cieslak, you mentioned how contagious measles is. Give us an idea, because it's one of those things where I've heard stories, too, about how easily it spreads from person to person within a room.
Yeah, it may be the most contagious disease that we have. It's truly an airborne disease, meaning the virus is coughed up in very small particles from the recesses of the lungs, and those particles dry out and remain suspended in the air. It sort of acts like a gas. So if I have measles and I cough into the room and walk out of the room and you walk into the room an hour later and breathe the air, then you could get measles just by breathing the air that I had coughed into. Most diseases are not like that. Most diseases, you kind of have to be close enough to the person either to touch them and get a germ that way, or to directly be kind of sneezed upon, and feel the spritz coming at you. But measles is really an airborne disease where direct contact isn't needed. One thing that illustrated this was a case that was documented that occurred in an arena where an athlete marched in through the, marched onto the field at the opening ceremonies, and somebody who was sitting in the stands like 100 feet away contracted measles from this athlete who later proved to have measles. So more than 100 feet within a stadium, this thing spread. Of course, he was the only one susceptible in the area, but they got the viruses and proved that the viruses were linked to each other and that's how he got the disease. So very, very highly contagious. And that's why, for measles in particular, we need to sustain such a high immunization rate if we want to get rid of the disease.
Dr. Paul Cieslak is the medical director of the Oregon Immunization Program. Stacy Deassis-Matthews is the school law coordinator. We're talking about school exclusion day coming up on February 18th in Oregon. Students who don't have their vaccinations in order will not be allowed in school or daycare after that date. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange with comments or questions, 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Paul in Grants Pass, welcome to the Exchange.
Good morning. I'm a firm believer in immunization and the process. Doctor, you're preaching to the choir here. However, I feel what's gone on, that people have become less afraid of these various diseases and much more afraid of the immunization process itself, between anecdotal evidence, anecdotal stories, and the apparent corruption of the FDA, USDA, and other agencies that are supposedly monitoring these various products that are being injected. It seems to me we need to go back, do the long-term studies, do the studies independently of the agency or of the entities that are producing the products, and making sure that they're safe so that the public can do that. Again, it's a manifestation of that fear and mistrust. And I'll take whatever your comments to that are off the air.
All right. Thanks, Paul. Appreciate that.
I think you're right in that some people just don't trust the system. They don't trust doctors like me, you know, or they think we've sort of been brainwashed somehow and we're just going to spew the party line. Yeah, I don't know what to say other than to tell you what I know about the process and what my experience has been. 20 years ago, I worked at CDC, and I was staffing a new vaccine recommendation that was coming out, and I was reviewing the data and was privy to some of the data that the manufacturer had provided and was also privy to some of the correspondence between FDA and the manufacturer. And I was really impressed with how thorough the FDA's review of this product was. They were thinking up questions that, hadn't occurred to me, demanding additional data from the manufacturer. You know, we're not going to license this vaccine unless you can answer all of these following objections, and, you know, oftentimes requiring whole new studies to be done before the vaccine gets licensed. So I'm pretty comfortable that the FDA is vetting these vaccines very thoroughly before they get licensed. And then afterwards, as far as following up on the side effects, there are several systems in place to try to identify difficulties with the vaccine. Now, one of the things I would note is that it's easier to raise a suspicion than it is to address the suspicion scientifically. First of all, you know, it's almost impossible to prove a negative in the scientific sense that one thing happened to one person because of a vaccine. You know, there is a system for reporting suspected adverse events, and then there are systems in place for following up when you get kind of a suspicious number of reports. It says, wow, it looks like we've gotten a few of this side effect happening from this medicine or this vaccine. And there are very good methods of following up on those. Not at all related to vaccine manufacturers, but there's a system called the Vaccine Safety Data Link that looks at data from Kaiser and other health maintenance organizations where they have all the information on who got what vaccine in the in their population, and then you know, what they presented to medical care for, and they're able to, you know, correlate and see whether any particular alleged side effect is actually occurring in vaccinees more commonly than in non-vaccinees, and that's really the bottom line.
Is there a particular approach that's advocated for doctors to discuss vaccines with their patients? I mean, you just gave us a very good explanation, but a long one, and I wonder if there's almost a bumper sticker version that is more easily translatable to patients where they're just assured or not in a short order about the safety.
Boy, I don't know if there's a shorter version of what I just told you. There are vaccine information statements that go into the disease and the vaccines and their side effects. But I don't know that there's something, you know, an encapsulated version of the process organizations set up in place to look for vaccine side effects and address potential concerns. That's maybe something we should work on.
Stacey Deossis-Matthews, the exemption law for Oregon is actually different this year, or different last year anyway, isn't it?
Yes, that's correct. So parents with a strongly held conviction against immunization can claim a non-medical exemption for their child. Previously, prior to this school year, a parent needed just to sign a form. But this school year, in effort to address some of the rising exemption rates that we talked about previously, parents have to get a little bit of education about the benefits and risks of immunization prior to claiming that non-medical exemption. And that information can come either from a healthcare practitioner and getting a signed form from them, or by watching an online education module available on the Oregon Health Authority's website.
So they basically watch it's akin to a video or something?
Yeah, it's a video, and it has an introduction with Dr. Cieslak doing part of the narration. And then it goes into information about each of the different required vaccines, and parents can choose which sections they'd like to watch based on which vaccines they're considering claiming an exemption for. So, for example, if a parent wanted an exemption for the measles vaccine, they would watch the introduction and the section about the MMR, measles, mumps, rubella vaccine.
Well, I guess that's one of the major points is that people don't refuse generally all vaccines, but just a few of them here and there. And so do we have any idea how many kids might be kept out of school and how many were at Exclusion Day last year, for example?
So we know just over 5,000 kids were actually excluded on Exclusion Day because they didn't have the documentation on file either of exemption or immunization. But if parents have that documentation on file at the school of child care by the start of school on February 18th, then they won't be excluded.
All right. So is it that they're turned away on February 18th? You know, don't come to school on February 18th if your snuff is not there? Or is it if you don't have it by the end of the day on February 18th?
It is the beginning of the day. So make sure you have that documentation on file and in your hand if you need it when you take your kid to school on February 18th.
All right. So Dr. Cieslak, where besides the family doctor's office can people get vaccines if they want to do so?
Well, some pharmacies are able to offer vaccinations, although they're limited in what age groups they can vaccinate at. Some county health departments also offer vaccines. I don't think there's a problem with an insufficient number of vaccinators out there, though. I think there are, plenty of doctor's offices who have the vaccines and can get your child vaccinated if you come in.
All right. And, Stacey, letters have gone out, right? So parents should have been notified by now that Exclusion Day is coming?
Yes, letters went out last week. So they should have come late last week or at the very latest today.
All right, that's the Oregon's immunization program you're hearing from. Stacey Deossis-Matthews is the school law coordinator. Dr. Paul Cieslak is the medical director. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
You're quite welcome.
Good to have you.